Bohuslav Jan Procházka and his companion Jindřich Kubiás set off from the Prague Auto Club on Opletalova Street, across from the city's main train station, on April 25th, 1936. They were driving a Škoda Rapid car, and their aim was to set a new record for travelling 360 degrees around the world. B.J. Procházka's son, Brett, who is now in his early 80s, lives in West Hampton, New York State. On the phone from there, he told me a little bit about his father's life.
He went to Průmyslovka in Prague to study engineering, and one of his classmates was President Havel's father. He was studying architecture, and right after the war, World War One, they because Dad could speak English, they asked him to represent the school in New York at the Student Congress. And that's the way he started to write. He had to report to Havel because he was the chairman of the student body over there. And that's the way he started reporting. And he wrote for many car magazines. He was a car fan all his life. Unfortunately, he died also in an auto accident outside Washington, D.C. on October 29, 1971, when he was 74.
When B.J. Procházka set off around the world in 1936, he was partly inspired by a boyhood dream. And he also wanted to help put the Czechoslovak state, then less than two decades old, on the world map.
He was inspired by the Count Borghese, who went from Beijing to Paris on a car named Italia. And he read about it when he was a child, and my grandfather actually knew the Count. And that's the way it started. And then in 1936... he felt nobody knows much about Czechoslovakia. The intelligent people knew that, you know, Czechoslovakia existed. But the common man in the street didn't know even where Czechoslovakia is located. So he felt if he gets a car and makes a statement with that he's going to go around the world with a Czech flag, everybody will notice.
Their vehicle was a Škoda Rapid, which had been launched by the world-famous car maker 2 years previously, in 1934.
Škoda car was Škoda Rapid, 31 horsepower, and the displacement was 1.4 liters, was front-engine, rear-wheel drive car with three-speed transmission. It was a standard car, except they put an extra large tank, a gasoline tank, so he could go quite a distance. He could go, I think, 1,000 miles without refueling, because that time in Asia, there were no gas stations. You know, he used to get gas from the drums directly with a hand pump. That's the only modification to the car. And I think they raised the springs. They put blocks underneath the springs so the car was higher from the ground.
As we've heard, B.J. Procházka didn't make the round-the-world trip alone. He was accompanied by Jindřich Kubiás, who was a trained mechanic. I asked Brett Procházka whether Kubiás had been a friend of his father's or a mere hired hand.
No, he was a friend of his, Yinda Kubias, for years, and he was a very likable guy, and he decided that he'll take him around, because they were very compatible.
After leaving Prague in April 1936, Prochaska and Kubias went east.
They went through Germany, Poland, to Latvia, and to Russia. In Russia, they had a problem because they wouldn't let them go through. Even though he had a letter of recommendation, they had to call Moscow. They had a delayed couple of days there until they gave them an escort, a soldier that was escorting them through Russia, and they had to drive at night because that time Stalin suspected they were spies.
The two men's trip through Russia was also recounted at the time by a publication in India called the West India Automobile Association magazine. The author is simply given as a WIAA member.
One of the reasons Mr. Prochaska gave for the permission granted him to travel through Russia was that he was known in that country as much as his own, as a keen racing motorist. He is on the committee of the AA Club in Czechoslovakia and is the European correspondent of the American journal American Motor.
The article also recorded the conditions the adventurers met in Russia in 1936.
Most of the common people met with in Russia, Mr. Prochaska said, were unkempt and in rags, and at out-of-the-way halting places, after overcoming an initial timidity, the peasants had no hesitation in begging for bread. Living at a Russian hotel was also an experience not easily forgotten. The food, though passably good, is more costly than the dearest hotels in New York, London or Paris. Every bucket of bath water had to be paid for separately. And the service, Mr. Prochaska observed, was anything but service. Waiters thought nothing of leaving diners to fend for themselves if they thought the work was a little tiring.
On the line from New York, Brett Prochaska takes up the story of his father's journey through the Soviet Union.
That time, Stalin believed that if there's an invasion, the only way to slow it down is by not building good roads. So most of the roads were dust roads. So they were fine in the summertime, but in the spring they turned into mud roads. Many places they used railroad tracks because the roads were unpassable. Don't forget, he started in the spring, and that's when the roads get kind of muddy.
Their car may have been a more or less standard Škoda Rapid, but one of its features was unusual, to say the least.
They had a secret compartment in the car, and they were afraid of bandits, especially in Asia, you know, Pakistan, because they were drug trafficking. So they had, I think Chiskas Broyovka had it, gave them two handguns, and he had a submachine gun, Thompson submachine gun also.
And did the two Czechs ever find themselves in any tight situations on their travels?
Not really, except there are a few tight situations where there were collisions and luckily, they were not involved, but nothing in that respect, you know.
We heard a few moments ago how Prochaska and Kubias were less than impressed by the standard of hotels in Russia. But there must have been many times when, far from civilization, they would have happily settled for even the poorest Russian hotel.
Many times they slept in the car and they bought supplies on the way if they could, but they had canned goods, they had even chocolate in a can supplied by Litka, Czech manufacturer, and they had canned goods, and they had water also, cans of water, because they went through the desert, and you know, it's pretty hard to get water.
You're listening to Radio Prague, where in this special program, we're taking a look back at a remarkable 1936 round-the-world car trip taken by two Czechs, BJ Procházka and Jindřich Kubiáš. The Czechs were apparently the first people ever permitted to drive for any great distance through Russia. But wherever they went, they caused a stir, often making the local newspapers. Here's a passage from the Illustrated Weekly Bombay, dated Sunday, May 31st, 1936.
Dusty and travel-stained, a Škoda car decorated with miniature flags of several countries through which it had passed drove into the fort the other afternoon. The two young men who had alternatively driven the car 10,000 miles were young Czechoslovakians who had left their native city of Prague on April the 25th last year and were only halfway on their journey around the world.
The article was accompanied by a photograph taken from the Illustrated Weekly's office window, showing a crowd of around 50 people gathered around the Škoda car. The picture's long caption included an interesting aside. The bareheaded gentleman is Mr. J.V. Polak of Bombay, who showed them around the town. Brett Procházka says crowds gathered wherever the car stopped.
People are curious, especially when they see car that had different flags on the hood and a Czech flag, and they inquired where Czechoslovakia, and they could speak English, so in India it was easy to communicate. And they were quite friendly. They were very curious people. He always, wherever they stopped, they had many people around looking around. So, you know, 20, 50, and especially in Persia and India, Pakistan, and Malaysia, and he loved people, and people loved him. He was a very people-oriented person.
You might expect that the media in Czechoslovakia would also have followed Procházka and Kubiáš's journey around the world. But that wasn't really possible, in an age when communication was often infinitely slower than it is today.
At that time, the communication wasn't so good, so embassy people would come and greet him, and in Persia they had a big party for him. Like, they had even the Minister of Interior come to the party. They had about 300. It was one of the biggest parties he had on the trip besides United States. About 300 people showed up, and it was sponsored by the Czech embassy. And usually the Czech embassy saw to it that the paper, the press people are informed ahead of the time. But nothing like today where you have email and TV. That time you had only newsreel and newspapers.
After all their trials and tribulations, things became significantly easier for the two Czechs when they reached the United States.
Once they reached San Francisco, there was a piece of cake. They had, you know, gas stations. For the first time, they got a good service on the car, and everything was downhill going east. And he spoke English quite well, so they enjoyed the trip going through the United States.
The Western India Automobile Association magazine followed Procházka and Kubiáš's trip, although this account of a special reception for the two in New York was published many months later.
The American Automobile Association gave a banquet in their honour at the Lexington Hotel in New York, where the speaker of the evening, Mr. Thompson, the father of American motoring, presented a gold medal to Mr. Procházka. Mr. Procházka also received a silver map of the world, the Waldes Trophy, for a record of a round-the-world trip covered in less than 100 days.
People in the car industry attended, and he made a speech over there, and everything went well. And he got some silver cups and decorations, you know, all that. They were quite impressed because at that time, you know, going around the world in a car was never done completely, you know, 360. They had races like from Paris to Seattle, Washington, I think, was from New York to Paris. But not a single trip that was 360 degrees by car, and so it was unique. It's not like today. Today, you know, there's nothing to it. By 1936, there were not too many roads and not too many gas stations, and only the upper class who had cars, except for the United States, where you had Fords.
As we've heard, once Prochaska and Kubiaz got to the US, it was all plain sailing, and the two motored eastwards as fast as they could in order to complete their record-breaking attempt. And when they finally reached the Czechoslovak border, there was a big reception waiting for them.
The president of ASAP, the Škoda Works, organized a welcoming trip, and they had about over 100 Škoda cars escorting him from the border all the way to the auto club in Prague where he started from. And there was a big reception afterwards. I remember that distinctly because I attended. And Jara Pospíšil, that time he was the big singer. He was singing at the reception there. Originally, when he started, Škoda kind of laid back. They didn't want to get involved because it was kind of risky. But once he completed the trip, they all came out and gave him a big reception.
A full seven decades later, Brett Prochaska has clear memories of the day, June 31st, 1936, when his father BJ and Jindřich Kubiaz finally arrived in front of the Prague Auto Club, from where they had set out 97 days previously.
I was 11 years old, and I never forget that because there were thousands of people in front of the building, and we couldn't get to the building there, so we had a police escort to let us pass through to so I could embrace my dad after, you know, we didn't see him for like 3 months. At that time, I was quite young, so, you know, I was impressed that so many people showed up, and I felt my dad is a big hero. But of course, I love my dad, and we're glad to see him.
And the state of the car after traveling over 27,000 kilometers, the Western India Automobile Association magazine reported the following.
A diary written during the trip is interesting. The front spring had to be repaired 18 times, out of this no less than 16 times in Russia, once in Iran and once in China. Tyres had to be repaired 22 times, mostly in Russia. Out of the total 6 tyres, 4 originals completed the trip. The original set of sparking plugs was used throughout, and 1 ignition cable was replaced on account of faulty insulation.
At that time, Škoda built good cars. And would you believe that he had the springs were checked over and I think some were replaced. But otherwise, the car was in good condition. And he kept the car as a family car. So we had the car for some time until we had it through the war, was in the garage. But after the war, it was confiscated. But right now I'm looking for the car myself, and I would be willing to buy it and recondition that because I would like to plan a trip around the world as in a like caravan style where we would have a film crew and make a documentary on about that. But so, you know, it's in planning stage. We have the financing in place. We're still looking for sponsors, but But first we have to get a car and rebuild it.
After World War II, the Prokaska family decided to leave Czechoslovakia for the United States. Brett Prokaska says his father stayed involved with cars for many years before entering the aviation business, a field Brett himself also worked in.
He was always involved in car business. So he imported Skodas with Vaughan at that time for a while. And then he was writing for car magazines a lot, and freelance. And then he got a job with Countermeter as an export manager. He was representing the company throughout the world. He was vice president of export. And then later on, he started his own company, Solari, the telecommunication for airlines, flight information. I'm an aeronautical engineer by profession, but I always was interested in cars, and I worked for Lockheed Aircraft, Republic Aviation, and collected a few cars, and right now, I'm retired and I'm planning a trip around the world.
Brett Prokaska on the phone from New York. And thanks very much indeed to Mr. Prokaska for providing us with so much information about his father's fascinating journey. We hope you've enjoyed this special program from Radio Prague and that you can join us again soon. From myself, Ian Willoughby, and all of us here in the Czech capital, thank you very much for listening. Goodbye and take care.